You are listening to the Plastic Surgery Revolution with Dr. Stephen Davis, the one and only podcast that discusses modern plastic surgery and leaves you looking great and feeling better.
And I'd like to welcome our guest for the first hour, Dr. Stephen Davis. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Just fine.
So I want you to tell us a little bit about yourself and where your practice is and what you sort of specialize in.
Okay. My name is Dr. Stephen Davis, and I'm a board-certified plastic surgeon, and I'm in the greater Philadelphia area. I have offices in Philadelphia, Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and also in Northfield, New Jersey. And my specialty is really cosmetic plastic surgery, so everything from facial injectables and facelifts to breast augmentation and liposuction and tummy tucks and all that fun stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
And do you have a website that patients could look at?
Yes, they can go to davis.cps.com. It's also Davis Cosmetic Plastic Surgery.
Okay. And you have recently become sort of interested in the prevalence of illegal fillers.
Well, one of the reasons why I got so interested in it is because I've seen over the past, I'd say, 6 months, an inordinate number of cases that have come through my office of people that have just had a lot of problems with fillers.
Wow. And what do you, so there are lots of fillers on the market
right now
that are FDA approved. And obviously for our listeners, the FDA approval process is quite rigorous.
Yeah.
And those are things that, you know, a lot of people know the names of: Restylane, Juvederm, Radiesse, and such. So, but
right. You're
talking about things that are not FDA approved and are...
Well, it's actually interesting because it kind of spans the gamut.
Okay.
You know, when I started, I would say the majority of what I started to see in the beginning were problems associated with injectables that were done possibly by people that were not as expert in doing them. Maybe they were choosing the wrong filler to be placed in a different location than it really was made to be injected.
Okay.
So, for instance, when you're injecting, as you know, when you're injecting around the lips, you want that area to be a product that would be very soft.
Yeah.
So some of the other products that are out there that would be more along the lines of what you would put on a bony prominence, such as a cheek or a chin, you really wouldn't want to be using that in something that was supposed to be soft like a lip.
Right.
So when you see problems like that, those are things, I guess, that are associated with just, you know, maybe not the greatest approach to injecting in that area. But over the past few months, I've seen a lot of patients that have gone to places out of the country, or they may have gone in a salon somewhere, and somewhere in the back of the salon, there's someone that's injecting stuff today.
Right.
And you don't know where that stuff has come from. You don't know what it is. You don't even know where they got it, how
yeah.
it's brought into the country. And they end up with these problems, and they show up at, you know, your doorstep, and it becomes a real Sherlock Holmesy kind of a thing
yeah.
to figure out.
And what kinds of problems have you seen recently?
Well, the most recent one was one that was injected into someone's cheek in order to use it in a way that would, like, lift the face up a little bit.
Yep.
And I'm not sure what the product was. It seemed to me that... So for the listeners out there that are going through and are trying to understand what we're talking about, there are certain fillers that are made from a hyaluronic base. And when it's a hyaluronic acid filler, we have something called hyaluronidase, which is the antidote, if you will. You're able to inject it into that product, and it will dissolve it.
Right. So if someone has a, you know, an unsightly result from those types of injections, we can sort of solve the problem
exactly.
pretty quickly. Yeah.
So, the, you know, it's kind of like your little toolbox that you have to try to help somebody with that. So when we inject this into that area and nothing really happens, that's a good indication that it probably wasn't a hyaluronic acid filler.
Right.
And then, you know, we try to do some other types of things to try to extract it. But a lot of times it turns out that it really is only going to get taken care of by doing some kind of a surgical removal of the problem. And, you know, again, sometimes it may be infection.
Yeah.
So, you know, it becomes a very difficult thing to handle. And I just think that, you know, patients in general and the population of people that are really interested in doing these things, because, you know, face it, most people really would love to have a quick fix in order to get themselves to look, you know, more youthful or take away, you know, wrinkles or, you know, anything like that. But you really have to, you know, at least in my way of thinking now, if it's a really inexpensive thing, if it's being done in an area where you would think most likely it wouldn't be done if it was a real doctor doing it or something, I think those things should be red flags for the patients to understand that something's up and you should just question it.
I totally agree. I mean, I think if if anything seems too inexpensive, too good to be true,
right,
and seems a little sketchy,
right,
it should feel professional. Whatever the setting is, it should feel like a professional setting. And there are some medi spas that I think, you know, are okay. They have medical directors who are plastic surgeons, who are dermatologists, who are
absolutely
perfectly qualified to oversee these things, but then there is sort of the other end.
That's right.
And I think if it sort of seems like it's a really, really good deal, because these medications that are FDA approved are very expensive. And
they
so,
are.
You know, if you're getting something for under $200, it's probably not something that's approved.
You really do have to start to question it. And one of the other things, I'm a trainer for a lot of these injectable companies. And when I go around and train other plastic surgeons, dermatologists, other people in how to use these products, one of the number one things that we really talk about, especially with the newer products that are going to last longer, is the way of injecting it so that the skin is extremely clean.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we're going overboard at this point in trying to teach everybody, you know, I guess really sterile techniques that you would use in the OR, in the operating room. We're trying to bring some of that sterile technique back into the system of, you know, injecting fillers, because some of these fillers, the FDA has approved some of these fillers to last up to 24 months.
Yeah.
So you really want to make sure that everybody's technique in using these products is as, you know, sterile as you can make it in an office setting like that.
That's a really good point, because I think people, patients and even doctors to a small degree,
absolutely,
sort of, it's very casual. It's a very casual encounter, because compared to surgery, it's so much less invasive and so much less of a big deal. But, you know, if you do it improperly, you can get terrible infections. And, you know, we've both seen that. We have a call from Hannah in Missouri. So we're going to take that. Hannah, what can you do for you?
Hi there, doctors. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Hello.
I'm good. Hello.
I wonder how cold it is where you are.
I'm wearing a coat and it's snowing everywhere, so it's not.
All right. So it's like New York. So, you know, we're the same.
Oh, gosh. I don't love it. my question is, I'm 25. I'm in pretty good shape. I work out quite a bit. I recently, well, not even so recently, but I did lose some weight, and I have noticed that I have a solid amount of stretch marks on my, like, rear end, lower thighs. They're not red. They're white at this point, and I know that they're pretty much the permanent kind. But I was just wondering, I've never had any kind of cosmetic procedure done, and I was just wondering if there are options out there for fillers or something that you might recommend that could possibly maybe help the appearance, or just if, what you would have to say to that.
Sure. Dr. Davis, what do you think? And then I'll throw in my two cents.
Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you something that sounds a little crazy at first, but bear with me just for a minute. Okay. So one of the great things about borrowing ideas from other surgical procedures and things like that, was born from liposuction. And let me just preface this by saying one of the great operations that we've been doing in the practice is a Brazilian butt lift. And it sounds crazy because you really think of a lot of images that sound like, well, that's not exactly what I'm looking for. But let me just explain what I'm talking about. If you can take a little bit of fat from an area of your body where you don't want it to be, and then transfer that fat into an area where you would like it to be, that's basically, in essence, what we would call a fat transfer. And a lot of the patients that come in that are, you know, they may have had multiple pregnancies, or like you, they may have lost a lot of weight, and they find that they're starting to get some skin sag as well as some stretch marks in areas like the buttocks where they really could use a little bit of that fat that they lost because of their weight loss. Unfortunately, it went away from a place where they didn't really want it to go away from. So if we can harvest a little bit of fat from some place where you really still don't want it to be, we can transfer it into the butt area. And I'll tell you, we've had tremendous success in making that area just look much more youthful. So that may be something to check into. There are some lasers also that help with some of the, I say more than anything, it's thickening of the dermis that will start to happen that will make some of the stretch marks look better. But those two things have actually worked very well in that buttock region. What do you think, Dr. Hazen?
I totally agree. I mean, I think that we've done a bunch of studies actually on fat and how it improves a lot of things from radiation damage to rejuvenation.
Yeah.
And so what a stretch mark is, just so you understand, it's basically that there's a loss of elastin fibers and a thinning of the dermis. So that's why it almost looks see-through, you know, because it kind of is. And if you look at the skin right next to it, or you look at like your back skin, it's very thick. But those areas where you have a stretch mark, it's exactly what it says. You know, the skin has stretched and it's thinned out. So the injection of fat, we're not exactly sure why. It may be because of adipose-derived stem cells, which are in the fat, or it just may be the process of injecting. But it does seem to actually improve the collagen wherever you inject it. So you inject it into the face not only acts as a filler, but it looks the skin looks better. So definitely I think that can help. And then the other thing is, which I totally did not believe, partially because I guess I'm a skeptic, but certain lasers really do make a difference. And I've had a couple of patients who, and really, you know, I'm so grateful to my patients who say, well, just try it. Let's see. Maybe it'll work. And so we did it, and she was a really skinny patient who'd had twins and had very stretched out skin. I did a tummy tuck on her, removed most of it, but there still was some stretched out stretch marks. And then we did laser and it made a huge difference. And then we did it again, made more of a difference. And now the stretch marks are, you know, they're, you can sort of see them, but they're really, it's dramatically improved. And what Dr. Davis said, I think is correct. I think it somehow stimulates the collagen. So it actually thickens up that skin. So they're definitely, I always used to say, stretch marks, you know, nothing to do about it. And I used to say the same thing about cellulite. And now I think there are actually things we can do.
I think you're right. And I think the take home message, I think, also is that it isn't going to be a really quick fix. Just like we were talking about with the injectables, if it sounds really unbelievably too good to be true, it's most likely going to be too good to be true. But if you take the time and really, you know, I think one laser session on those stretch marks, is, no matter what the laser is probably not going to make you see a tremendous result right away. But I think, you know, a series and really doing it in a very didactic fashion, I think you will see an improvement in most of those stretch marks.
I agree.
Can I ask, is there a particular type of laser that I should be, like, looking for? You know what I mean? Because I know there are various options out there. So.
Dr. Hayes, what do you
like? I like either erbium fractionated or CO2 fractionated. I think either one works pretty well. Erbium is a little less painful. But I think either one could do the trick.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think the erbium lasers are much more user friendly for these types of things. So that someone that gets that done, you know, within 4 to 6 weeks, you could have them come back and you could redo that area again. And again, the repetitiveness of it is actually going to be the thing that starts to build that collagen from below, so that weakened or stretched skin starts to thicken.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
So I'm Dr. Alexis Hazen. I'm talking with Dr. Stephen Davis, and he is a board-certified plastic surgeon, and he has a private practice called Davis Cosmetic Plastic Surgery in the Philadelphia area. We're talking about Originally, we're talking about fillers gone wrong, but we are happy to answer your questions about other issues. If you want to call us, you can call us at 1-877-698-3627. So we were talking about sort of problems with fillers. What kind of materials are you seeing most often nowadays with the illegal fillers?
Well, there have been a run of these. I guess they're a silicone-based product that is very user-friendly from the standpoint of being able to be injected, but it's not very homogeneous. In other words, there's a lot of other products that are mixed in with it that give it different qualities. And I think when we've had a couple of patients that have had their, we're talking about the buttock region. So I have had a couple of patients that were out of the country and had their butt injected with some filler material, and it's the kind of filler material that you've heard about in the news where you've had some patients with disastrous results.
Yeah.
And I've had a few patients, one or two of them actually went on TV with me to actually talk about the problem, and they have had to have serial, like, come in and have those areas drained. From time to time, because I guess it must come to the surface. It gets like secondarily infected somehow. It gets strained. We put them on antibiotics. But I don't really know if there's a fantastic way of making sure that the entire thing is gone.
Well, I guess that's the problem. And I think one of the nice things about the fillers nowadays, I mean, it's sort of a double-edged sword, but other than fat, which when we use it, it's your own fat, so you're not going to reject it. You're not going to have sort of problems in terms of those issues. But the other fillers do go away after a time. So so with silicone, let's talk about that for a little bit. There was a period of time when it was on the market and it was legal as an injectable material. And then it was taken off the market as an injectable material. And now recently it's come back on and it's FDA approved for a specific I think it's a lacrimal gland injection for ophthalmology. So I know that now that it's available, practitioners are using it for off-label purposes, which we can explain in a second, but what's your feeling about that?
Yeah, you know, I have met some plastic surgeons and dermatologists over the years that have been trained very well in the use of free silicone. And I think that they really know how to use it properly. They may be using it in bad acne scars, pitting scars, and things like that, where there really aren't a lot of great answers. And over the years, they've gotten very, very good at doing it. They understand it, and they're comfortable with it. If those people are doing it, you know, God bless them. I think it's great, and they've really mastered that. I just think that it's a major can of worms that you don't want to open up.
Yeah.
Because I don't understand how it sometimes can travel and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
And I just think that you're going to end up with a potential problem for that patient that You know, I, you know, again, and if you talk, if you speak to people that really understand how to use it and have been using it for years, they may think I'm crazy because they understand it so well. But I think in the hands of someone that really isn't that comfortable with it, I think you're better off leaving it to the experts with the free silicone. What do you think?
I agree. And I guess I'm a little even more cautious than you are about it. And I guess it probably comes from the fact that at NYU, for years, we saw patients who had had silicone injections in their faces, and that they had terrible reactions to it. And they had faces that were lumpy and bumpy and really looked horrendous. And so we did, you know, over the years, and I'm talking 10, you know, long time ago, 10 years ago, we did a lot of procedures where we removed the silicone and then actually did free flaps that were buried to, you know, camouflage this.
Right.
So that's my big experience with injectable silicone. And so, you know, obviously that's a huge disaster.
Right.
And the way to fix it was, was a very, very big deal. So I'm sort of, and then I had a number of patients who had silicone injections to the lips.
Well, that's what I've seen mostly.
Yeah, and it just always was too much.
Yeah, you know, and that's the problem. I think it's one of those substances that you're just not sure, I think, how that person's body is going to handle that. And once you see a couple of these really disastrous type things, I can't imagine that you would be so willy-nilly to just go in and use it, even if it is, you know, something that's back out on the market again. I just don't think, with all the other options that are available, I can't understand why. Now, again, I do get the fact that it's a permanent thing.
Yeah.
But let's go into that maybe a little bit, too, because one of the things that I just operated on someone a couple of weeks ago, do you remember the Gore-Tex stuff?
Yes. Yeah, sure.
So, you know, for the listeners, I guess, too, to know, it would look like a piece of linguine.
Yeah.
Right? But it was made from Gore-Tex material, and it was going to be permanent. It'll be in there forever.
Right.
And I guess it was such a great idea because you figured, well, you could string this across the lip.
Right.
And you're going to have this permanent filler kind of a thing or this permanent fullness. The problem, I guess, that most people, you know, never really thought through is that as the lip continues to age and as you continue to age, even though that piece of linguine may stay where you put it, the lip doesn't. So, you know, like that piece of linguine could be right where you put it, but now the lip is tucked underneath because you're starting to get that senile lip or that inverted, you know, kind of tucked in look, and now it looks awful.
Right, and I think that's the same thing that would happen with the silicone injections.
Absolutely.
Is rather than sort of aging with you, it's like a breast implant, right? So, you know, they're great, but as you age, the skin is going to droop off of the implant. And that's, I think, what happens with the injectable. With an implant, then the solution is sort of simple. You know, you can do a mastopexy, so you can remove a little bit of skin if it seems bothersome. Or not do anything. But with the face and the lip, what are you going to go cutting up lip skin to, you know, deal with this? And so it's sort of, I don't know.
I agree with you. And I think that's when I'm, you know, talking and counseling with my patients, one of the things I say, because, you know, everybody would love that. At least that's what they think at first. They would love that filler that's going to last forever.
Forever, yeah.
But, you know, one of the things I always tell them is, in a good way, it may not be such a bad thing that the filler does go away because as you continue to age, you may want to have that filler injected slightly differently. Because I know my patients that I've had for years, even with Botox injections and other types of fillers, you know, as they continue to age, my injection of them kind of changes,
right?
Because their face started to change. So instead of injecting it on a certain angle or in a certain, you know, acuteness to their, you know, smile lines and things, we may have to alter that now because they have started to age. And that, I think, is the beauty of having this dissolvable type of a filler, is that you can continue to modify it so it really matches you know, the way they want to look.
I totally agree. You're listening to Dr. Radio. We're talking with Dr. Stephen Davis about plastic surgery and cosmetic surgery. We're also talking about fillers and the good, the bad, the ugly. And if you have questions for us, you can call us at 1-877-698-3627. So in terms of the good fillers, which ones do you like and where do you see that fat can be used effectively?
Well, it's a great question. The one that I've really had so much fun with since it's gotten FDA approval is Voluma. It's this, you know, great idea that even though it is a hyaluronic acid, the makeup of it is such, as you know, which creates more of a lifting quality than a filling quality. So when we inject it into the cheek area, it isn't so much about trying to, you know, our whole, with Voluma, the concept has changed from trying to see a hollow or a crease and filling it. And instead of thinking of it that way, we're trying to say, you know what, if I could restore the facial fullness in an area, usually up by the cheekbone region, where the face has started to descend because we've lost that, you know, that apple, that, you know, that really nice fullness in the face. And we're calling it this age-related volume loss, if you will. So if you can restore that volume loss into the central part of the face, you all of a sudden notice that that nasolabial fold or those smile lines don't look as deep anymore. The eye hollowing is all of a sudden not as hollow as before. So I've had a lot of fun utilizing that, and it's almost a way of giving someone like a mini facelift in a way. So I really do like that a lot. And I'll tell you, to go back to one of the points that you made about fat, I do like the idea of using things like Voluma or Juvederm or Restylane, which is a hyaluronic filler that will go away over time. But if the patient says, you know what, I really love the way that looked, is there anything that's more permanent than that? Now you can, you know, talk about fat injections. And you can say, you know what, if you really like the way you looked with this, let's talk about taking some fat from an area of your body and then trying to structure it into your face. And I think that works really, really well. And as you know, fat is going to be one of those things that is more of a permanent solution. It's just that for someone that's never had any fillers before, I'm kind of hesitant to use that right away, because if they don't like it, it isn't so easy to get rid of.
And you don't have that the chemical that dissolves the hyaluronic acid. You don't have the same thing with fat, so you'd have to figure out how to remove it, which can be challenging.
And how about you? Well, which fillers do you find you like the most use?
I basically agree with everything you said. I also like, there's one called Bellatero. For sort of like tear troughs or more fine lines. It's much smoother and thinner than the other ones. It's not for volume at all. And I think that one makes a huge difference in the under the eye area.
I like that also.
And I really do like the fat. I think it's a great option for people who are interested in more permanent solution and who are comfortable with, you know, how they've looked with fillers. And I think it's, you know, I've gotten, I do it a lot, so I'm very comfortable with it. And I think it's a great resource.
Yeah, I think just like, you know, with other types of procedures, I think physicians like yourself that are really, really comfortable in getting the fat properly, you know, making sure that you're injecting the fat properly and just doing it in a gentle fashion so that it's going to live, I think that's such a great option for patients. And they can really get such a youthful look by using fat.
Absolutely. We're going to take a call from Joy in Arizona. Hi, Joy.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
I have a silly question. I don't know whether this falls under plastic surgery or not, but I'm 72, and I have the droopiest earlobes that I have ever seen. It looks like a hound dog, and I have never seen anybody. I look at everybody's earlobes, and they all got these cute little earlobes. And I guess it's from years of wearing big clamp-on earrings or something.
I think it's a great question. And actually, a lot of people your age and younger have the same concerns. So, Dr. Davis, what can she do about it?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, it's funny because patients come in all the time and they talk about their earlobes or the tip of their nose all of a sudden looks like they're growing or getting bigger.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, and, you know, I think there's a lot of reasons why it gives you that appearance. But one of the ways to really make it better can be to restore some volume to that laxity. And that's where some of these fillers like the Restylane or the Juvederm, you can take a very small amount of it and actually inject it into the earlobe. And we've done that on so many patients. It literally looks... Do you know when you get a brand new box and it has earrings in it? Like you got a gift and it's sitting in that pillow?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's exactly how you can make that earlobe look. Because a lot of times the women will say that they're wearing their earrings and they're almost like they don't even want to wear them anymore because of that. And when you restore that fullness to the earlobe, you can really see the earrings much better and it does look much more youthful. Many times when we're doing a facelift, that happens to be an area though where we can make the earlobe a little bit tighter while we're actually doing the procedure itself.
Oh.
But from a non-surgical approach, you can definitely use one of these fillers and just restore some of the volume. How about you, Dr. Hayes? What do you think?
I think the injectable idea is brilliant because that you can do just, you know, in the office. And that is the problem, you know, it's sort of, it's a droop effect, right? Because it's sort of you've lost some of the volume in the lobule. But you also can do a little wedge resection.
Yes.
And during a facelift or not. And it's pretty simple. And you literally remove a little bit of the ear lobule so that it is smaller. And a lot of people get that done. You know, you're more... in tune, I would say, because a lot of people don't notice it. And sometimes we as plastic surgeons, if we are doing a facelift, might point it out and say, you know, does that bother you at all? Or do you have any trouble with your earrings? Because it is common for people as they age. And now you're aware of it, you'll notice it. And you'll notice like in younger people, their earlobe is really tight to their head.
Yeah.
And in older people, it's often can look almost floppy. You know, it's sort of, right?
That's right.
And it's not so much from the earrings. It's much more just from the aging process.
Right.
Oh, just like everything else.
Yeah. So even if you hadn't worn those big earrings, it's still. So don't.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I asked. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
You're welcome.
You're listening to Dr. Radio. This is the Plastic Surgery Show. We're going to take a little break now, and we will come back in a few minutes with more of the Plastic Surgery Show.
Panel 20.
A dose of Dr. Radio.
It's been shown over and over again. If you put the same amount of food on a small plate, people will finish it and say that they feel satisfied. If you put the same exact amount of food on a larger plate, they'll finish it and say that they're still hungry.
It doesn't take much to get a concussion. It could be bumping your head on a bedpost, certainly hitting your head against the wall, and you don't have to lose consciousness.
Dr. Radio, because it matters where and when you get your health information. Sirius XM 81.
From the lobby of the NYU Langone Medical Center, this is Dr. Radio.
Welcome back to the Plastic Surgery Show. I'm Dr. Alexis Hazen, and I am live from NYU Langone Medical Center from 6 to 8 p.m., and I'm talking with Dr. Stephen Davis about fillers and cosmetic surgery, and we've got a bunch of calls, so we're going to take another call from Gina in Arizona. Hi, Gina.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Hi. My question is Botox and MS. I haven't really been, it hasn't been ruled out. They have tested me for it. but I was wondering about, you know, if that's
safe
or not. Yes.
What do you think, Dr. Davis?
I'm very conservative with this stuff, and I just don't know if that's a great idea.
Okay.
Dr. Hazen, what do you think?
Well, you know, I saw the call before I saw what the question was, and I was thinking about it because I haven't had a patient with MS who wanted to have Botox. I think if, you know, it's probably a dose-related thing in that you give a small dose of Botox, mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't tend to travel far. So what does that mean? If you're injecting the forehead, you know, it's going to basically stay in the forehead region. But I would be very cautious about it. And get, you know, if you were going to do it, check with your neurologist.
That's right. That's what I would say.
And then,
is there any other filler that you can use from the frown lines in the forehead?
Well, I'm happy you said that because there's almost like a plant. I'm so happy you called because a lot of people think that Botox is a filler. And that's a great way that you described it. So let me make sure that you understand the difference. Botox is really a medication that puts muscles to rest for a while, for a period of time between, let's say, 4 to 6 months. So anybody that has a neuromuscular disease or any type of a problem like that really should be in question about being able to utilize Botox. But when you're talking about those frown lines or you're talking about grooves, let's say, in your forehead and things like that, you could use a filler which has absolutely nothing to do with any muscular or neuromuscular problems, and that's one of the things that we were talking about earlier in this hour was using something like a Restylane or a Juvederm, which is really like a jelly-like substance that can actually plump up the crease or the hollow. So instead of even worrying about the Botox, if you really do have a groove that you're thinking should somehow be full or maybe not as deep, then you can get something like a filler, like a Juvederm or a Restylane, and stay away from anything that may cause any problems with muscles and things like a Botox.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate you.
Oh, thank you for the call.
Yeah, thank you for the call. And now we're going to take a call from Cheryl in Palm Springs. Hi, Cheryl. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm going to pull over real quick because I'm driving.
Okay. Yep, safety first.
Okay. Safety first. Okay.
Right.
Ready?
Yep.
Okay. Did they tell you a little about my situation?
I know you got fat injections, but the audience doesn't know anything. So let everybody know.
I had a mid-lower facelift almost 2 years ago. They had fat. They took fat from my abdomen and put it in my face, around my lips, under my eyes. And it seems to be going away quite rapidly, and I'm frustrated. So I just was curious what I can do and why it's not lasting.
Well,
So, and how long ago did you have this done?
Almost 2 years.
2 years. And when did you start it noticing that it was sort of, it had gone away?
Oh, I noticed
away?
It looked good after 6 months, and then I noticed it slowly, you know, kept going down.
Huh. And have you lost weight?
You know, I was thin when I had the surgery. I've lost a little bit more weight. But even before I'd lost a little weight, it just started going down. I do have to say I take a lot of digestive enzymes, probiotics. I exercise. I just wondered if maybe it's just kind of metabolizing really fast.
How much weight have you lost since the surgery?
Oh, not much. 5-8 pounds.
Okay. And but you're thin to start with?
Yeah, I'm only like 115 pounds, and I'm almost 5'6".
So I'm going to start, and then I'll let Dr. Davis weigh in. Usually, in my experience with fat, it is what it is at about 4 months. At first, it's always bigger and fuller. And then, mm-hmm. in my experience, at about 4 months, it's kind of pretty stable. Unless there is some change, a weight gain, a weight loss. My thinking might be that as a result of the enzymes and, you know, for you, a 5 to 8 pound weight loss is significant. You know, for somebody who is 20 pounds overweight, you know, and they lose, because that's a large percentage of your body weight. So, and what happens is that fat doesn't know it's in your face. It thinks it was where it came from. Mm-hmm. So when you lose weight, that fat loses weight the same way as if it was on your belly or your butt or wherever they took it from. So that would be my guess. But you know, every technique is a little bit different, and you can lose up to 30%, I mean 70% of what's injected. So I don't know, Dr. Davis, what do you think?
No, I think everything you said is perfect. That makes so much sense. I think that's one of the reasons why I think these fillers, again, that come out of a box have become so popular, is because the reproducibility and the length that it's going to stay is something that you can almost quote to a patient so that they know how long something like that's going to last. I know in my experience, people's fat is really different.
Yeah.
You know, some people, I know when I'm doing a fat grafting type of a case, I sometimes can't help myself, you know, being so excited and happy, because once you tap into the fat, you see how robust and, you know, healthy and juicy it looks. You go, oh my God, this is going to be a great case. This is going to be great for this patient. And then other times you go and you're, you know, harvesting the fat, you go, it's very stringy. It has a lot of fibrous tissue in it, not so much fatty tissue, and you kind of know that maybe you're not going to get that same result. And a lot of times you just never know until you're really doing the case. So, you know, I think that has a lot to do with, and just like Dr. Hazen was saying, you know, the individual person's technique and how they're harvesting it, how they're re-injecting it has to be done in a very gentle fashion. And you know, those are the things. And again, it does retain its donor memory. So from wherever it came from, that's why, Dr. Hayes, I don't know if you do this, but I know I always ask patients, if we're going to do a fat grafting procedure, I always ask them, okay, if you were going to go on a big diet, where would be the last place that that fat would go away from? Because that would be the best place to take that fat for the harvesting and the transfer, because we know that that area doesn't go away so quickly, because it is going to remember where it was taken from.
They did that. They took it from my abs. That's right.
Right.
You know, my weight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, so you, I mean, you have some options. One would be to just try some of the off-the-shelf fillers, because, you know, just because you've had fat doesn't put that out of the running.
Right.
Or you could try another fat graft if you sort of like the way it looked.
Right.
But
and why don't I feel my fat grafts? Like, he did some in my lips. I don't even feel them anymore.
Right.
Well, I mean, if you can see them but not feel them, that's good. If they've just gone away completely, then, you know, that's not so good. But ideally, because they ideally would become a part of where they've been injected to and sort of incorporate into that area. So hopefully you wouldn't really feel them.
Do you think because my hormones are so low, I have very low hormones and I'm only 52 and I'm even on hormones. Do you think because, and they're still low, you think that's the reason?
I don't know. I don't know how, you know, the response to that. I mean, certainly body fat does decrease with estrogen and, you know, they go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
And when a lot of women go through changes in hormones, they can lose weight from certain parts of their body. So that may be part of it.
I got to say, having a little extra weight on you is better in the face. That's where it all comes out of, is my face. And I'm thin, so it just keeps getting thinner.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. People say that. That was like the famous thing that Catherine Deneuve, the French actress, said. She said, you got to choose. Once you get over a certain age, you got to choose either your hips or your face. And she said, well, you can always cover up your body, but your face is hard to cover up.
Right.
So my only recommendation is, if you chose to do the fat again, be at the weight that you want to be at, and try to maintain that weight after or before. Because the other side of this coin is that if people gain weight significantly after they have fat grafting, those grafts can grow. And
right.
So, you know, we have seen that also where, you know, we injected somebody and they look great and then they gain 20, 30 pounds and the fat grafts get bigger. And sometimes it's not, you know, if it's a place like under the eyes, that's not desirable.
Correct. Yeah. And the other thing to know is that, you know, even though some of that fat may have gone away, layering over top of that with more fat grafting, let's say, isn't such a bad thing. Because I know I always tell patients that, and just like you were saying, Dr. Hazen, you can know up to about 60 to 70% could really go away over the course of that 3 to 4 month period. And especially when we're doing things like grafting into someone's buttock region with them sitting and doing all those other things, you really may be, you know, killing or squashing some of those fat grafts. So, having the option, though, to go back in and let's say even 40% is still there, you can relayer over top of that. So maybe you'll get an additional, you know, 30 to 40% over top of that, which is also something that's going to be permanent. It may not be as, you know, as much as you wanted it to, but it is another way of thinking about it.
So, Cheryl, we hope we helped you and thank you so much for calling in. We're going to take another call from Andrea in California. Hi, Andrea. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
I'm starting to get a little obsessive about my under eye area. It's not terrible, but I've had some upper cheek fill, like a, what's it called, Sculptra, which has been very, very lovely. Over the last year and a half, I want to say, and it's really developed nicely. It took at least 10 minutes off of my age. The under eye area, I'm noticing that with a slightly fuller cheek, the under eye seems to appear a bit more hollow.
Okay.
You know, again, sitting at a red light in the California sun looking in the mirror, bad thing to do, but I do notice that. I spoke to an ocular surgeon, and he suggested, rather than fill it, to go to sleep for a few minutes and laser it. He's a big fan of lasering the skin, and I'm scared to do that. I'm 55 and a half, extremely athletic, not real skinny, just good body weight, good build, but, you know, I think the athletics also suck a lot out of me. I'm not sure how to go about this. I did have Sculptra kind of close to the under eye area, developed sculptomas, and had to have them injected to make it disappear. Under the right, I have a little puffy area kind of in line with the pupil. It comes and goes depending on the level of swelling I'm experiencing in my overall body.
So, Andrea, let me just ask you.
There you have it.
Couple questions. Would you say when you look at the skin under the eyes, is it sort of crepey and thin and wrinkly a little bit?
It appears to be, when I smile, it creeps up.
Okay.
But when I'm relaxed, no, not so bad.
Okay.
Considering that I'm in the sun 10 hours a day.
Right. So, Dr. Davis, what do you think?
Well, this happens to be one of the top things that come into the office all the time. And I think here's my approach to it with the patients. I always hand in a mirror, and it sounds like you're doing that in the rearview mirror of your car right now. So it's a good thing. And I guess I always ask everyone, you know, what is it about your lower lids that bother you the most? Some people will look at it and say, oh, there's fat pockets there. I don't like the bags under my eyes. Other people, like you just said, will say there's a hollow there, or there's a groove, or there's a, it makes my, there's like a dark shadow there. And then other people will say, oh, no, it's the crepiness and the wrinkling that's there. So I think all three of those depending on what the patient's really focusing on, can be addressed in three different ways. And let me go over that. If the patient's looking at the lower lid area and they're seeing bags or fat pockets, I think the best way to go about taking care of that is to remove the fat. It's a little surgical procedure that you can do to have the fat removed, but I think that will address that issue. If the patient's looking at it and seeing that there's a hollowing, or it looks like their eyes are very sunken, or there's like that dark circle there, I think filling that with some of those fillers, like we talked about earlier in the show, is a great way of camouflaging that groove or that hollow that's under the eye. And then if it is crepey skin, thin skin, or wrinkled skin, I do think that the lasering procedure does a very good job to resurface that skin in that area. Sometimes you may need a little bit of all three, but again, most of the time it kind of tends to be what the patient is focusing on.
Does that make sense, Andrea?
It really does. My particular case seems to be focusing on more the hollowing issue.
Yeah.
The skin isn't, I wouldn't describe it as creepy. It's just like, you know, smile wrinkles.
Yeah.
Very fine line.
So then I don't think you're going
to, for the outside.
Yeah, the laser is not going to be the best result for you then. Because
no.
If that, and that, you know, like Dr. Davis was saying, it's sort of, you've got to, there are different things that bother people, and whatever bothers you is what should be addressed primarily. And so, you know, if you were to get the laser done, that would improve the quality of the skin, but it wouldn't change the appearance of the hollow at all.
Right.
And so that, I don't think that would do it for you. And that doesn't appeal to you anyway. So I think that's not.
It really doesn't. And it makes the skin very sun sensitive. And at this point, I'm not willing to make that lifestyle
right.
change.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing that you can do, if you do have those little crow's feet or those little lines that happen when you smile, a little bit of Botox in that area also does a great job in making that skin look tighter and more youthful. And you can do that, you know, simultaneously with also putting a little filler in that area.
Absolutely. So we are totally running out of time, which is just incredible because I feel like we just started. Quickly, how to spot illegal fillers? What should someone look for?
I think the first thing that you really have to do is just ask to see what's being injected.
So actually the box.
See the box,
yeah.
See what it is, and really get a sense, is it one of those names of things that you've heard of before?
Right.
You know, find out the qualifications of the person that's doing it.
Yeah.
You may even want to inquire how they get it. If it's someone who's not in the medical profession and they're injecting this stuff, you have to ask, well, how did you stumble upon this? How do you get this stuff if you really need to be a doctor to get this stuff?
Yeah.
You know, how does it end up in your hands? So I think right there is a real good sign.
Yeah.
If it is something like a Botox injection, Botox, you know, has a hologram on the label.
Right.
And you can ask to see the bottle.
So
to
we're
make sure.
Out of time now.
But
thank you so much for being with us this evening. We really appreciated your expertise and all the information you gave.
Thank you for listening to the Plastic Surgery Revolution with Dr. Stephen Davis. Please subscribe to our show in iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or whatever app you use to listen to podcasts. Keep listening, looking great, and feeling better.